Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Hello, welcome to the Autism Detectives. This is Patricia Lemmer, the author of Outsmarting Autism. I am thrilled to have today as my guest a longtime friend with whom I have just reconnected, Dr. Deborah M. Wilson. Hi, Deb.
Hi, Patty.
And I left Deb in California, but she's now in Arizona, right?
That's right.
And she's quite unique. And I've always loved your stuff, Deb. And I'm trying to remember how long ago we met. It was over 20 years ago with your product called School Moves, S-apostrophe cool. And you are unusual in that you got involved in the nervous system as a reading teacher, and I suspect that had something to do with your own daughter. So
that's right.
Talk to our audience about how you went down this rabbit hole of the nervous system in the classroom, and we're going to get into where it's led you today, into polyvagal theory, which is one of my favorite subjects, and you are a genius in making it understandable to the public. So go ahead and tell us how you fell into this.
Well, my first child, Celia, she was born with a constellation of challenges, including microcephaly. Her head was in the 1 percentile, and she had neurodevelopmental delays and also a rare genetic syndrome. And 28 years ago, the Internet wasn't what it was today, but it is today. So the roadmap to helping my daughter was often kind of frustrating, and I just had to search, and it was a day-by-day experience, you know, getting through each day. But it also led me to create School Moves and write the books that we'll be talking about today. I was hoping to help shortcut families who are in similar situations. At the same time, I was dealing with my students at school, and my reading students were kind of stalled, and they weren't making the progress I wanted them to make. So I basically, while I was at home doing all this therapy with Shalia, I brought what was appropriate into the classroom and started seeing some amazing gains with my students. Today, my daughter is living in her own apartment with a roommate, and she's supported from the Arizona Division of Developmental Disabilities, and she wanted to move out. I wasn't too sure about it, but she was sure she could be independent, and so she is now living in her own apartment and thriving. And
I love it. She's 28.
Yeah, she's 28 now, and it's because of the work that we're going to talk about today that she's able to be as independent as she is.
I just love it. So you have written that you were always fascinated by the science and the nervous system, and yet you became a reading teacher.
I was a high school biology teacher first, Patty.
Okay.
So I was a high school biology teacher, and then half my students couldn't read the books well enough to pass tests and really understand what I was teaching. So I went back to school and got my master's in clinical reading, and started working with high school students who were struggling readers, and a lot of them had dyslexia and ADHD and you know, other different challenges. And from there, I went to the elementary school because I thought, what happens if I could catch them a little younger than high school? And then
right.
I worked for 8 years as a reading teacher in the elementary schools. And that's where I really started diving even deeper into the nervous system and the neurodevelopmental aspects of learning.
And then you developed School Moves, which really was focused on preschoolers, and wasn't it for preschool teachers to get movement and vision and reflexes into the classroom for everybody?
Right. It started more at the primary level, and then I had a lot of preschool teachers contacting me, so I had to modify what I was doing with the primary students for the preschool students, yes.
So talk about School Moves generally and then some specifics, because it's still a program, right?
Right. Yeah, School Moves is where I bring the neurodevelopmental aspects of learning into academics. So as a reading teacher, I'd only have students for 20, 25 minutes. So I didn't have a lot of time to do a whole different program that just worked on the sensory system and the visual system and, you know, all the focusing systems that help students learn better. So I figured out how to integrate it into their reading sessions. And it worked beautifully. The students were really motivated and engaged because we did a lot of movement. So as they come into the classroom, they do different moves to get them ready to learn. They'd be sitting on a gym ball instead of a chair, sitting at a desk, and I'd have them bounce a little bit on that gym ball to get the vestibular, the inner ear system ready for the reading process. We did a lot of quick little vision warm-ups to get their eyes ready to read. We did some midline activities to, you know, just to get both hemispheres engaged and ready to learn. And it just sped up the process. So our kids that were kind of slow and plodding along, like the bottom quarter students, started making much faster gains.
And what I loved the most about it was that you improved their reading by not working on reading.
I know, and I'm not, you know, sometimes my peers, my colleagues in the reading world, sometimes they don't quite understand that I still was teaching good, you know, using good reading practice, but without also working on the neurodevelopmental aspects and readying the mind-body system for reading, readying the nervous system for reading, it's just plod. You just kind of plod along. You can still teach it, but it just doesn't go as well. And reading is such a stressful experience for students, especially if they know they're failing, if they know they're behind. And so looking at their nervous system and keeping them in what we call ventral, that's a polyvagal term. Ventral is where we're not activated, but we're curious learners. We're ready to learn. We feel like we have the skills to do whatever is asked of us. We know where to find, like if we're having challenges, we know where to go to ask for help. That's what I call a ventral learner. And that's mm-hmm. what I try to do with my students, is teach them how to be ventral learners, even when they were stuck, even when they were struggling. Like, well, what do you need now? What does your nervous system need now to help you get past this roadblock?
And you started doing workshops for these teachers to educate them on the foundations for reading and writing and learning of all kinds, because you and I know that if they were ready, if they had the foundation, they would have learned how to read. They wouldn't be dyslexic or learning disabled.
Yeah, we have a lot of different ways that we can look at students and identify students. I think for some parents, having a label helps them to know where to go for resources. So I know some schools are diagnosing dyslexia and some schools aren't. Some it's like, you can't go near that word, and other schools are very inviting. Basically, with dyslexia, I feel like any child struggling with reading could, you know, be considered as dyslexic. My sense is that students sort of learn to read if they don't have these challenges. They somehow figure it out. But if they're struggling and you're just seeing they're not making that progress and they're lagging behind, usually there's a neurodevelopmental aspect of some gap, some missing piece that child needs in order to be able to be a better reader.
So it's the proverbial, you've got to be able to walk before you can run. And you've got to be able to track before you can read. And you've got to be able to discriminate before you can read. And you broke down these foundational skills into teachable lessons and posters and really fun activities that kids really, really enjoyed. Can you describe some of those?
What I did is, as I was watching Shalia go through her therapy, she did a lot of occupational therapy and sensory integration therapy, and as I'm watching her, I'm thinking, what can I do similar to this but practical and that would work in a classroom? How can I bring this really brilliant work that these occupational therapists do to help children focus, to help them with ADHD, to help them with autism? How can I bring this into the classroom in a way that makes sense and is easy for really busy teachers? Because the last thing teachers need is another thing to do.
Right.
And so I created these posters of that, like some of the posters are postural stability posters that work on core stability. Some work on midline. Some work on rapid naming and vision. And I just put them into a set, and there's a beginning set and an intermediate set. And they're so simple, they can put them at reading stations. They can, some teachers have them outside in the hallway before they come in during in the morning. They'll do a poster. All the students do that as they come in. Some have them in their classrooms as movement breaks. So while the students are needing those breaks, I'm a fan of, well, let's make them be neurodevelopmental. Let's make them be these kind of brain breaks that are also mind-body breaks, not just brain breaks, but bring the body to the party. Because like with Shalia and a microcephaly, her, you know, she just, nothing was happening. Her brain wasn't wiring. And so I had to create an environment from the outside in that kind of said to her brain, let's get with it. And I, the only way I could get her brain to wire was to use her body. And by going through these patterns and these neurodevelopmental movements and her occupational therapy and physical therapy, that's how we wired her brain for learning. And that's how all children's brains are wired for learning,
right,
actually.
So movement, we say, OT's taught me, is food for the nervous system. Just like we need good nutrition from eating, we need good movement nutrition.
That's right. It's essential. And today's times, we have to really watch our technology. It's very easy to hand an a small, like a one-year-old, a tablet or a game on a phone. It's so easy because it's a good babysitter. But when they're on that technology, they're missing those movement opportunities. And, yeah, it's a hassle. You kind of have to chase them around the house,
right,
you know, and they're on the move. But that's what's wiring the brain, and I think that's what sometimes we miss. And we're seeing kindergartners coming in now that are what we would call, you know, neurotypical kindergartners who are having troubles with all of these neurodevelopmental skills that they should have going into kindergarten. So they're lagging behind in reading. They're lagging behind in a lot of their academic skills because they haven't come in with this base foundation.
They haven't had the experiences. They haven't had these three-dimensional touch, move, feel, proprioceptive, vestibular experiences that the previous generations of kids who didn't have the technology had.
Exactly.
And so your School Moves program sort of fills that gap on for these kids who need the experiences. And isn't it crazy that we have to teach them to move when many teachers think, no, they should be sitting still and paying attention?
Yeah, you take a student that who's trying to sit at the desk, who's trying to focus, and they have weak postural stability, they're going to be laying all over the desk. But the brain is saying, I'm more important, and they may actually be trying to learn and focus, but the body can't do both. It's not able to think and process and all these concepts and also hold oneself upright. And that's something I think we don't always understand, is we're like, sit up. We're telling the students, you need to sit up. But one of the biggest things I say with the teachers is, just if you do a minute a day of postural stability with those students that are struggling to sit and focus, it's incredible the changes you'll see. Most of the time, whenever we have focusing issues, we also have postural stability issues. It kind of goes hand in hand. And the vision system wires off with the postural stability. So it all goes hand in hand, and it's like building a lovely house on a really strong foundation. That's what we want.
Right.
And when I was writing the polyvagal books, the two books, The Polyvagal Path, Joyful Learning, and The Resilient Learner's Backpack, I made a note that said, we also have to assume that the students have been working on their neurodevelopmental skills, because you can't really put all of this kind of top-down cognitive, let's learn about our nervous system, let's learn to name our nervous system. We can't put that on top of things. It's like building the house on the foundation that isn't there. So I
you
make a point
activity
to say we still need to work on it.
What?
I make a point to say we still need to work on that foundation.
Yep. Give us an activity that would build postural stability.
Well, I have two. I have, because some teachers and OTs that are working in the classroom and also doing some pullout are more able to get students down on the floor on mats, and others aren't. And sometimes we do collaboration with adaptive PE and with PE teachers as well. So the floor, one is they're going through all their developmental stages, 3 months, 6 months, 9 month old postures that all babies move through, but so many of our young students don't have those postures, and so we move them through that actually on the floor, and it's literally minutes a day that wire the brain. It's not like we have to do these 45-minute sessions, and
right.
That's, I think, the beauty of school moves is that we're talking about minutes a day. The minutes a day is what changes the brain. And the second way we do it is just sitting in a chair. So I have what I call core out the door. So at the end of the day, I just named it that because it rhymes and you can remember
it. I love it.
But at the end of the day, everybody does the core out the door before they go to get on the bus, before they go to after school care. And we know that rituals are just really, it build connections in classrooms. So I love to have like the ending of the day be something teachers put on some music that the kids like, and they do their core out the door, and it's a series of different, bringing the knees up to the elbows and things like that to strengthen core while they're sitting in their chair.
Isn't that great? You know, when I went to Kuwait to help establish a center for young adults with disabilities, we had these 250-pound neurodevelopmentally delayed men who had no core strength. They couldn't hold themselves up in a chair. And the OT that I took with me lay them on the floor on their tummies and had them do exercises on their stomachs, trying to hold up their chests and their heads and to write. And they all collapsed. They could hold it for seconds. It was just unbelievable because they had never been required. Their bodies had no idea how to do this.
Yeah, I had that happen with the high school. I started a high school reading lab, and with all the students who were really struggling readers, and that's what we did, and it was pretty incredible to see, you know, how difficult it was for them, but then also how quickly, you know, just doing it and working through those movements, the body learns pretty quickly. So it's not something that we have to do for years, and sometimes just those, I emphasize those minutes a day in a classroom can really make profound changes, those micro moments of connection with one another and also with connection. When we think about connection and safety, we also think about that connection with ourselves and getting to understand our mind-body connection and how our body works.
Right. So if anybody's interested in this School Moves program, how do they find it?
Just www.schoolmoves.com, and you spell it normal. You don't spell it with an apostrophe because the website doesn't like that. So it's just schoolmoves, all one word, .com, and I have a website with a lot of information. And also YouTube, all kinds of free videos. If parents or anybody on the call wants to learn more, I have a robust YouTube channel, and that one you find using the apostrophe S, apostrophe C-O-O-L, and then M-O-V-E-S.
And so that's a lot of free ways they can learn, but they also can take some workshops from you, right?
I do a lot of trainings in schools, yes, and I work on collaboration. So my focus of my trainings are collaborating between teachers and support staff. And one of the things I say is what we do for the students on IEPs and 504s and in special education, in today's times, they work, everybody can use some integration. It needs to just be part of what we do in schools generally. It doesn't have to be only this group needs it, because for every child who actually has an IEP and has some support, you've got another 5 to 7 to 10 in a classroom who do not qualify and need the help.
Right. And we all need, our bodies all need tuning up before we use our minds to calm them, to turn them on, and it's helpful for everybody, as you said.
Yeah, it's so really helpful. I'm one of these inclusive kind of people. I feel like what we do for one, we can do for all. And then also that one child that needs it doesn't feel like they've been selected to just do this move, because everybody's doing it, so it helps everybody.
Right. So it was when you were teaching one of these workshops that one of the participants approached you and said, "Oh, this stuff is old-fashioned. It's out of date. You need to learn about polyvagal theory, right?"
Yeah.
And that's what sent you down your next path. So
right.
We need to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to learn how you moved on. You're listening to the Autism Detectives. We'll be right back with Deb Wilson.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Lemmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Stuff, stuff, stuff. Where can I contain all of my stuff? How about this? The Container Store, the original storage and organization store. And I found their link on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. They have containers for everything, including the kitchen, the bathroom, trash and recycling, traveling, spring cleaning, and dorm rooms. Just about everything you can think of to contain your stuff. The Container Store, right on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Autism Detectives. I'm speaking today with Dr. Deb M. Wilson, who is the founder of School Moves and now the author of 2 new books, The Polyvagal Path to Joyful Learning and The Resilient Learner's Backpack. And these happened because someone challenged you and said, "This is really great what you're doing, and there's more." So take us down the path that led you to polyvagal theory.
That's right. So the science is supporting the neurodevelopmental skills framework more than ever. So we have nice, solid science about movement and how important it is for the mind-body connection. However, I had a social worker take one of my classes, And she was so kind, and she said, can I meet with you? And so we had a Zoom call, and she said, there's new information about the nervous system, because I was using the typical way we teach it with the nervous system is either it's on or it's off, and it's always looking for homeostasis. And she said, we've got some new information. And so I actually had Deb Dana, who is the social worker who translated a lot of Dr. Stephen Porges' work. He's the developer of the polyvagal theory. She translated that work into something that's more practical for mental health professionals. So I had her on my show. I had no idea at the time what a star she was in that field because, you know, as a teacher, I'm not that familiar with the mental health field. And as we were talking, I was getting more and more enamored and thought, wow, we really need to bring this into our schools. And I asked her, who is bringing this into education? And at the time, nobody really was. And so she invited me to take her work and translate it for the education community. And so the first book was published by Norton, and that's exactly what I did, is I took her framework with her blessing and put it into education language.
Isn't this great? So her name is Deb Dana, D-A-N-A, both two Debs, the Deb squared theory, and her stuff is really fantastic. It would help me understand polyvagal a little more. But your work is just, it's at my level because I'm not a scientist. And I'm an educator, and I want to know how do you make this practical. So talk about the first book, the Polyvagal Path to Joyful Learning. It's just so user-friendly.
Yeah, I really wanted to tell some stories and make the science and the theory be something that was interesting and people would want to read. So I did bring in quite a few stories from all my years of teaching. And I looked at academic theory, and it was a really interesting journey for me. I wanted to see how we can integrate polyvagal theory into academic theory, into like mindsets, growth versus fixed mindsets. And I looked at popular education theory that's used in everyday schools, basically, every day. And from there, just said, okay, I can see where it could fit here, and I can see where it could fit there. And that's how I wrote the book. And I designed it with seven principles because I always find it's easier to have little baskets to put things in. And what are our steps? You know, okay, if we want to make this applicable in the schools, what are these seven principles we should keep in mind.
Right. And so your first principle is befriend your own nervous system. What does that mean?
I love that word, befriend, and that's a Deb Dana term. We tend to get kind of hard on ourselves and critical of ourselves, and I think especially teachers, at the end of the day, we remember all the students that we've struggled with, that we've had conflict with, that we've had challenges with, and we don't always think about the ones that we've had success. And so befriending your nervous system means that first and foremost, you check in with yourself and you say, where am I? Deb Dana has what's called her autonomic ladder. And some, you know, if you picture a ladder, at the top of it, we're in ventral. That's where we're not activated. We're curious. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the show. And then the sympathetic is where we move into fight or flight. And then dorsal vagal is where we're in a shutdown place, where we kind of want to just stay in bed with the covers over our head. We don't really want to do anything. We feel like whatever we do isn't going to help anything. It's a little bit of place of sadness, loneliness, kind of helplessness even. And so in schools today, I encourage the teachers and the support staffers to keep checking in with yourself because we have to befriend our nervous systems before we can teach our students how to do this.
So apply this to autism. This is called the autism detective. How would our listeners know that they need this?
Well, we're always challenged, and when we're working with a child with autism, there's plenty of opportunity for us to move down our autonomic ladder, moving into fight or flight with a child or a student, our own child or a student we have in class, or going into dorsal vagal, like I quit, I can't do this anymore. So it's what we would do is as we're interacting with that student or our own child, is we're checking in, and we're, whenever we, if you just say, geez, I'm getting dysregulated, I feel like I'm moving down my ladder, I feel like this dysregulation is coming on pretty fast, just saying it helps us keep one foot in ventral. That's a Deb Dana quote. When I was writing the book, I asked for one thing quotes from people, like, of all the things that you do, what's one thing you want us to remember as educators? And Deb Dana said, always keep one foot in ventral. So you're checking in and you're saying, okay, I feel myself becoming dysregulated. What resources do I have around me, people, places, things that help me, strategies that help me, you know, whether it's breathing, whether it's taking a walk, leaving the situation for a moment. What do you need to return to regulation? Because when we're regulated and we're interacting with somebody who's dysregulated, we can actually loan our regulated nervous system to that person. We can actually, they benefit from being around somebody who is regulated as opposed to somebody who's matching them in dysregulation.
Wow. So you're teaching the teachers how to befriend themselves and be able to recognize these cues in their nervous system so that then they can recognize it in their students and then empower their students to do the same thing.
That's exactly right. And actually, I tell the story in book one in the part of the Eagle Path to Joyful Learning about a student who actually said to me I needed to do my school moves. I had come in after a rough day night with my kids. I'd been out on the playground in the morning doing morning duty. It snowed. It was cold. I was just miserable and tired, and every student who walked in, I barked at. Mm-hmm. And finally, this sweet little voice in the back of the room said, "Miss Wilson, I think you need to do your calming routine." And isn't that a wonderful thing? When the students can even see dysregulation around them. So that she was the student who had one foot in ventral. She was a student who could see the dysregulation and help. She helped loan her regulated nervous system to me.
I love it. I just love it. And the stories that you tell make it so much more powerful. I think stories are just so helpful because people really see themselves in these stories. Deb, it's time for another break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about safety, because feeling safe is one of the foundations of polyvagal theory. You're listening to the Autism Detectives with my guest today, Dr. Deb M. Wilson. We'll be right back.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Lemmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Shh! Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Autism Detectives. We're talking today about the polyvagal path to joyful learning. It's so exciting, Deb, what you have put together. And we can thank Carol Kranowitz, the author of the Out of Sync books and Out of Sync programs, for reminding us that we once knew each other, and that she told me how you have moved on from California to Arizona, and also from school moves to polyvagal learning. So one of the foundations of polyvagal theory is safety. Talk a little bit about safety and safety signals and how a teacher would tap into this.
So we talked about principle one, which is befriend your nervous system. Principle two is safety and connection lead to motivation and engagement. We hear a lot of teachers talking today about students aren't motivated and they're not engaged. Well, the foundation for that is safety and connection. And when we think about safety, we're thinking about safety from inside ourselves, outside in the environment, and in relationship with others. So that's the inside-outside-between model. When we're working with students, and even with our own children, we want to think about what cues of safety and danger are coming into our nervous system. And Stephen Porges calls this neuroception. It's a big fancy word for this constant monitoring. It's subconscious, that we constantly monitor our environment to figure out how safe we feel in this environment. And those cues that are coming in come in from inside, outside, and between. So inside ourselves, it's interoception is where it starts to become a place where we can look inside and feel our stress, actually feel, you know, there's a whole body of work that people are doing, like Kelly Mahler is doing her interoceptive curriculum, teaching children, especially children with autism, how to understand and improve their interoceptive awareness. So that is kind of a foundation piece of this, right? We have to be able to notice when
right.
we're feeling stressed or we're feeling afraid. And then those cues are coming, they can come from inside us, and it can also come from outside in the environment, just walking into a classroom, or when I'm doing a workshop, I walk into the facility I'm in, and right away I can feel whether that workshop's going to go well or I'm going to have to expend a lot of energy. So if it's a nice, you know, it's laid out nicely, there's screens, everybody's facing front, they don't have to kink their neck, turning to the side to see the presentation. All those things add up to my workshop's probably going to go okay, or it's going to be a little bit harder because the environment doesn't feel as safe to my participants. And then between is the relationship between ourselves and others and how safe we feel in those relationships.
And then we can develop the third principle, which are regulatory, co-regulation, and self-regulation, right?
Right. Principle three is co-regulation comes before self-regulation. And in schools, we focus a lot and our goals are a lot about self-regulation. But until
mm-hmm.
we've been able to co-regulate with another person, and that comes when we're, you know, in our infancy and as we're developing, we have this relationship with our care providers. And that's where we learn to co-regulate. And you can see when a baby's crying a lot, then the parent can kind of get dysregulated, and then the parent tries to do a little bit of singing and rocking the baby and regulating, and then the baby starts to get a little more regulated, and it's this give and take, right? But in schools, we want students to constantly work by yourself, get this done by yourself, or, you know, you need to be able to do this on your own. But what we want to try to do is think of co-regulation as a regulating resource as powerful as self-regulation. It's not either or, and it's not, okay, once you can co-regulate with another person, then you don't need it anymore. Our nervous systems love co-regulating.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about when you've had a rough day, you know, Patty, like for you, when you've had a rough day, you probably go and find your husband and say, hey, look, can we sit down and talk about this a little bit? And that's
right.
co-regulating, right? And at schools, at the end of the day, teachers go find somebody, and they say, can we talk, can we sit? And, I just need to tell you what happened.
Right.
Co-regulation is a regulating resource, and I want to bump it up. Like, it's so important. And, like, if we have handprints in a school moves class, I'm like, we'll have handprints on the wall for kids to go to their push place. So what I recommend now is instead of one set of handprints, so I'm still doing school moves, but I'm using all this polyvagal information to make it just that much deeper and that much more effective. So instead of one set of handprints, we have two. And we invite a student who's dysregulated. We ask, is there someone in the class who can loan their regulated nervous system to this student and can go over and would you like some co-regulation? Would you like a friend? You don't have to use the word co-regulation. Would you like a friend to do push-ups with you? And we tend to use that, look at that as they're weaker or they're somehow not going to get what they need because they need another person. But the nervous system is wired for that connection and that co-regulation. It's really important.
I love it. So that's the third principle then.
Right. And principle four is the resilience develops through retuning the nervous system. And that's probably one of my favorite chapters as we talk about retuning. It's such an interesting way to look at even how much, no matter what trauma we've had in our life growing up or currently, or if we can retune that nervous system to respond in a way that it knows how to get back into regulation when it's starting to feel those effects of the trauma, when it's starting to get triggered. And one of my favorite things is glimmers, and that's a Deb Dana principle.
Is what?
Glimmers.
Glimmers with a GL?
Yes.
What's a glimmer?
A glimmer is those little micro moments of connection with a person. Or you look outside and you see a beautiful flower or a beautiful bird flies by. They're just those little noticing of wonderful delights in our life. And what schools are doing now and teachers are doing is at the end of their day, they're asking their students to share a glimmer with them. So each student shares a glimmer that they had in the day. And even the students who have had a really rough day will share a glimmer. And one student said to their teacher, "My glimmer is glimmers."
I love it. Wow.
Well, it helps us to, at the end of the day, we may think that some students didn't connect and some students had a really rough day, but they will, that's how we retune the nervous system, to start to notice when things are going well. Not always like when things are going rough, you know, that's part of it, but we also have to notice when there's good things around us. And every day and moment, no matter what's going on in our lives, there's moments where we can look around us and say, that's a beautiful flower, or wow, that sweater you're wearing is a beautiful color. And just offering one another these glimmers, giving them, receiving them, sprinkling them around, helps retune our nervous system.
Deb, it's time for our last break. And you've mentioned the word trauma. We haven't talked about it. You experienced some trauma yourself and told your story in the book. And when we come back, maybe you can talk a little bit about trauma as we finish up the last couple of principles. You're listening to The Autism Detective with Deb Wilson. We'll be right back.
You know, when my grandson takes a long car trip, he listens to audiobooks. A long drive seems faster, and sometimes he doesn't want to get out of the car because the book isn't finished. With over 100,000 books, Audible.com is one of the best places to get audiobooks. You can listen to a bestseller anytime, anywhere. Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of audiobooks. Join millions of listeners. Just go to the Audible.com on HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Lemmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Autism Detectives. My guest, Deb Wilson, who worked with Deb Dana, has developed the polyvagal path to joyful learning with Deb Dana, and she's got 7 principles of transforming classrooms, one nervous system at a time. Deb, you talked about trauma a little bit, and we go into shutdown, into dorsal vagal, when we revisit our trauma. Can you talk a little bit about that and your own trauma, if you want, and how we get out of there as we look at the last couple of principles?
Sure. And, you know, we can sometimes be fight and flight. We can be triggered by our trauma. And I feel like what I wanted to do in book 2, which is the activity version for book 1, book 1 was heavy hitting on the theory and stories and that sort of thing, and book 2 is the resilient learner's backpack are the activities. But I really wanted to show ways that we can become more resilient even in the face of quite a bit of trauma. I grew up in a violent alcoholic home, and we had knives and we had guns and I would sleep in the car and, you know, until my dad would pass out, and then we could get back in the house, and I'd go to school after not having any sleep. But you know what? Nobody knew. In the day, we didn't talk about it, and I was treated like everybody else in the classroom, and I did well, and I liked school because it was safe. For me, school was that place where I didn't have to look over my shoulder and wonder if I was going to be in danger. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. It's not always that way in schools today, but at the time, other than, you know, the bomb drills where we'd have to hide under the desk. Remember those times?
Right. Right.
But generally I felt safe at school, and I loved school. And the trauma stays with us, right, and those stories stay with us. And that's, I think, in writing the books, it was a healing journey for me. It helped me to understand my nervous system was always in sympathetic. And it wasn't fight or flight, but it was this constant movement. It was always on the move. And my son would say to me, "Hey, Mom, can't you sit for 5 minutes? And he'd time me, and I'd be up cleaning and I'd be doing something productive, but I was always on the move. And since writing this book and befriending my own nervous system, I'm able to be quieter. I'm able to be more still.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, because stillness is a blended state of ventral and dorsal. It's a very hard state to get into quietly still for ourselves and our students. We really can't do it unless we understand our nervous system.
So can you quickly take us through the last 3 principles?
Sure. So principle 5 is adaptability relies on access to ventral resources. So if we want to be more adaptable and flexible and be able to kind of handle what's coming at us every day, we have to have this nervous system that's flexible. And we have blended states. So we have, like, play is a blended state of ventral and sympathetic. You have to have that grounding energy of ventral along with that energizing energy of sympathetic. And in classrooms, I often say sympathetic is disorganized mobilization. And so what we want to do is create activities for the students that help organize. So I do a lot of, like, tapping stick activities where they tap on words and things that are rhythmic and pattern that Dr. Bruce Perry tells us really helps with healing trauma. So I do that as part of their academic work.
Wow.
And principle 6 is nervous system flexibility underpins cognitive flexibility. So in schools, we talk a lot about cognitive flexibility, but it's impossible to have cognitive flexibility unless you also have nervous system flexibility.
Right.
And we get that through these blended states. And then the last...
That makes so much sense.
Yeah, and then the last principle is... I really love this principle. Dwell in possibility and enormous amount of curiosity. When we start feeling like we're going down that autonomic ladder or we're getting triggered or something's kind of rubbing us wrong about someone, lean into the curiosity. Lean into, geez, I wonder why I'm feeling like this. Like, instead of beating yourself up, or if you've done something, you're like, why did I do that? Instead, the curiosity. And there's some great science coming out that curiosity actually gets executive functioning skills online. So if students are struggling with things, if we say to them, wow, let's be curious about why this is hard for you. Let's be curious why you're having trouble lining up going to lunch. This is interesting. It just changes that whole judgment and how we're looking at it.
I love it. So do you discuss these principles with your daughter at a theoretical level, or you just apply them to her daily life?
Well, Chalene and I came up with animals. So we have these really cool animal puppets. So we have a Reddy rabbit. It's a cute little rabbit for ventral. We have a raccoon puppet for sympathetic, because raccoons can kind of get into fight or flight pretty easily. And then we have a turtle for dorsal vagal. And the head actually pulls into the shell on the little turtle. And it's been transformative for her, for being able to explain how she's feeling. And, you know, she's non-speaking, so she was able to talk, and then she lost her ability, I think, with the microcephaly. By about 12, the language kind of went offline. She had no language until about 5. Then we got it online, and then it went offline again. So I taught her to read, and she can text really well. So she texts me, and ever since introducing her to the nervous system states, I'll say, Shalia, are you a raccoon or a turtle right now? It helps me to understand, is she scared over at her apartment right now? Or is she sad? There's a big difference in those feelings, but she didn't really understand them. And she has 2 sets of those on at her apartment, and she has a set of them over here at the house. And she loves them, and she can really help express what she's feeling by getting her animal puppets out.
That is so creative and beautiful. I just love it. So you're working online, and do you still travel at all?
I'm reducing my travel. As I befriended my nervous system, I realized how stressful travel is, especially today's time. I just did a 2-day training in Southern California, and I came back with COVID, and that was pretty rough. It was 2 weeks trying to get over COVID. So I'm doing a lot of online trainings, and I have it so interactive now. On the other end, the participants are doing all the activities or tapping on their words with their little tapping sticks. It's very interactive, so it's working, and people are still, I think, getting the good information I want them to have, even though it's online.
I love it. And so how would anybody set up one of those trainings?
Well, and I do have a trainer in New York City, New Jersey area, and that's Dr. Jessica Gilson Shore, and she does trainings for TheraMoves. So if you look up TheraMoves.com, you can click and on their trainings, and they do school moves 2 times a year. So they have a fall and a spring school moves course where they can get their CEUs. They can get AOTA approved, PT approved, speech. I don't go into all of that because it's very difficult to get the approval. So I have my partner in TheraMoves, and they're great. They're wonderful. They do really good courses. They have a lot of different courses.
Well, Deb, I am so happy we reconnected. I love your books. I just love what you're doing, and I love that your daughter is doing so well and that you've helped so many people. And I know that this interview will help even more. So thank you for your availability and sharing your knowledge. And what we didn't say was that you got a doctorate because you just needed to do that, right?
I wanted to work on collaboration, and I wanted to do research on OTs and gen ed teachers in the classroom. And I was doing it on my own, kind of on the side. And I thought, well, if I did it with a university, it'd be so much better.
Yeah.
And so I did my doctorate at the University of Southern Queensland in Australia, and actually went there for graduation and spent 2 weeks there. My professor showed me all around Toowoomba.
Amazing.
And it was a great opportunity. It was a really great program. And we didn't talk about causal layered analysis, but also part of the nervous system befriending is befriending our stories. And so in the book, I also bring in my doctoral research methodology, which I used. It's called causal layered analysis, where we look at our layered perceptions and our beliefs and our myths and our metaphors. So I bring that into the books as well.
Well, thank you, thank you. This has been eye-opening, and just keep on forging ahead, and we'll stay in touch.
Thanks for all your work, too, Patty. You're doing great work in the world. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options from basic inexpensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to Bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
I'm William Shatner, and this is Jimmy. Animals like Jimmy are often left behind by people fleeing hurricanes, fires, floods, and earthquakes. These abandoned animals cannot survive on their own. If you must evacuate your home, please never leave an animal behind. If you absolutely cannot take your animal with you, never leave him helplessly chained or caged. Many animals die because they cannot escape fires or rising waters. Animals need your help. Thank you.
Call PETA today, 757-622-PETA.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.